Welcome into the second season of Savvy Citizen. I'm your co-host, Adam Gobb. We're going to be talking this season with a number of different folks. Starting off this February, we've got an episode coming up next week on Black History Month that I think you're really going to enjoy. But today, we're kicking things off for the second season, going back to the past, a little bit of a blast from the past, if you will. We've got the director of the Gaston County Museum, Jason Luker, and the education manager, Alex Brooks, joining us today. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. Jason's been there for about 5 years.
About 5 years.
Yeah, and Alex, you've been there for over a decade now.
I have.
So these guys, between the two of them, have a wealth of knowledge in all things Gaston County and all things Gaston County history. So we're going to hop in the Wayback Machine today and go back and for a little bit of storytelling with these two. So you guys are talking a little bit today about something that has seen a lot of people through the pandemic, and that is alcohol.
Yes.
Yes. Ourselves included.
Exactly.
So obviously, people think about, prohibition, but there's more to illegal alcohol sales and illegal alcohol making, if you will, in Gaston County than just the time during prohibition, right?
Yeah, I think ever since there's been a drink made in this country, they've been trying to regulate it.
Sure.
And we can even look at it as nationwide. Our first rebellion had to do with whiskey, and once we were a nation. So it's always been running through our veins when you talk about prohibition, you talk about drinking.
Yeah, and I mean, whenever we say prohibition or, you talk about illegal alcohol, everybody obviously thinks about, the national prohibition and everything in the 20s.
Sure.
But the first prohibition actually was the state of Maine in 1851. So, I mean,
really?
Not only have they been trying to regulate it, but people have been trying to get rid of it as well.
It's one of those things. I don't think a lot of people know much about Maine unless you're from the Northeast. So
yeah.
That's
well, it was repealed 5 years later. So, I mean, it didn't stick around very long.
They have those long, cold winters, and people are probably 1 year into that going, what were we thinking?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You're looking over at Virginia longingly, and you're like, oh, man, wrong side of the Potomac.
Right?
Willing to travel.
Before we started the podcast, you were talking to me a little bit about just going back into the history and this, the idea of, making moonshine or making, whiskey or gin or any other kind of illegal alcohol of your choice. It's got connections to somebody that sat on the Board of Commissioners, right?
Oh, yes. We actually had a Board of Commissioners in the 1800s by the name of Leroy Suggs, who was a known distiller. Now, Leroy had an issue, though. He didn't like to do it legally. He preferred not to have, it appears, not to have legal distilleries. That's the thing that we normally don't think about when you talk about prohibition. We usually kind of jump towards the morality issues of it.
Right.
One of the things that when you're looking at the prohibition is its connection to the community as a industry, as commerce. And here in Gaston County, our claim of fame is that we were the capital of distilleries before prohibition, that were legal distilleries. Not to say we didn't have illegal distilleries, bringing Exhibit A, Leroy Suggs.
Right.
But we had that, and there was a big fight between those who were being legal and paying the taxes and those who were not being legal, like Leroy, who were kind of skirting the taxing. There was a wonderful little article in the Southern Home that came out in 1874. It's one of the earliest accounts of Leroy and him getting in trouble for his alcohol. And it says, "It has been stated that Leroy Suggs of Gaston County with several other persons were deprived of his whiskey, still working without a license." And the correspondent says that Mr. Suggs has never run a blockade still, meaning that he never was bootlegging, but is trying to run according to the law, but he cannot get his papers from the money grabbers. And that just kind of continues on for poor Leroy. He finds himself in court in 1892. He's actually there in the federal court. There's been a warrant put out for his arrest.
Oh, wow.
And we find out later because of that, that a seizure took place and 170 gallons of unstamped whiskey, meaning illicit whiskey, was taken from his farm. But it was said that he had 1,800 gallons of whiskey, but they couldn't find the rest of
Holy
it.
Cow.
It's well hidden.
Well hidden. Or
so this is not just for his poker buddies.
No.
No.
It was legitimate. And to kind of build on that, In 1897, apparently Leroy kept on having problems because he also had another raid in 1896 where 29 barrels were taken from him. And interestingly enough, in 1897, there is an ad in the Charlotte Observer, and it's from a local store off of Trade Street, 205 East Trade Street in Charlotte. And it says, just received 29 barrels of fine old handmade copper distilled corn whiskey made by L.L. Suggs, one of the finest distilleries in Gaston County. And I guarantee this lot of whiskey to be from 2 to 3 years old and to be one of the finest lots of goods ever placed on this market.
Wow.
So he was known for really good whiskey, and he continued to run into the law throughout his time. It appears while he was commissioner, he was still having to deal with his side hustle on that he was running out of his business. So,
by the way, I'm going to start using that as my excuse whenever you come to fuss at me. It's just I'm waiting on my papers.
It's just waiting, you know, dadgum money grabbers.
It's the money grabbers,
and that is kind of one of the funny things is you can that resonates throughout time. You know, for everyone that's ever tried to do something a little on the snide, it always kind of comes back to some person they refer to as the money grabbers.
Yes,
that they're fighting against.
Yeah, we just kind of shake our fists at the IRS. But yeah, it's kind of the old-timey version, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And those are pretty good. I mean, you're thinking about it. It's 25 cents per pint, 50 cents per quart, and $2 per a gallon.
And that's in the 1890s.
That's in the 1890s. So it's you can see why someone kind of stretches their chins. That may be me in these activities.
Sure. And apparently he was popular enough that he was serving it at his daughter's wedding. And
yes, so there's at least two accounts that we have, one of a wedding and another one of a party, a dance party, that was well received. And everyone talked about how lovely of a time they had. And I imagine, you know, some libations were provided for the party. And an interesting aspect about Leroy, during this time, we believe it was the Hull House over in Dallas, which is a historical site now. Where he was, his abode, and also the brand new Sammy's restaurant, the Setzer Building. He had a hand in that as well.
Wow!
So whenever you go, I always think when I go to Sammy's and enjoy an adult beverage, I lift one up for old Leroy. Thanks, Leroy.
I'll just put it out there that today my role is basically to be Owen Wilson, and just every few minutes I'm just going to go, wow. Right.
Well, you know, it's interesting too that, I mean, because you obviously at like his daughter's wedding and, you know, these parties and everything, there's going to be other prominent figures there. So there's going to be, you know, other county commissioners, you figure, and probably some law enforcement as well. We had one gentleman that was actually in Lincoln County. It was a sheriff that was being elected. This was in 1931. They never actually said whether or not he got elected, but during the election, he showed up with a friend of his and brought two cases of the finest Gaston County liquor as well to help, you know, promote the vote.
So was 31, were they already in Prohibition at that point?
Whenever you're talking about Prohibition, the Volstead Act is what always gets brought out.
Sure.
Which was named after Republican from Minnesota, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, that introduced this bill that was basically making it illegal to manufacture beverages with more than 0.5% of alcohol. President Woodrow Wilson was president at the time. He actually vetoed it.
Okay.
And then Congress overrode it.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to remember, and these two things go hand in hand, is the year before. So that was in 1919.
Okay.
In October. In June of that same year is the same time that we actually have the 19th Amendment. Which made it legal for women to vote.
Right.
And women were the driving force behind the Prohibition Act. You know, there were plenty of guys that were involved in it as well. Sure. But this was overwhelmingly the first legislation we really see, primarily because women had just gotten the vote just a very few months prior.
Right.
But this is one of the big things where we see this new demographic that has been added into the voting populace. That they're able to make a change. And so that's, you know, you have the women now available to act. They're really the driving force behind the Temperance Act. And just a very few months later, we see Prohibition go into effect. But yeah, Prohibition, it went into effect in 1919, and it comes down in 1933. So it lasted for quite a while. 1920 actually is when it actually goes into effect.
Gotcha. So how did that kind of change the landscape here? I mean, we talked about, you know, Mr. Suggs being kind of, you know, late 1800s in terms of his heyday, but, you know, did that change, you know, increase the number of bootleggers and people making alcohol illegally here in Gaston County, or was that already kind of, you know, a hopping business?
Dramatically. I mean, we, you know, when Jason made the comment that we were the sort of the capital of whiskey production for the state of North Carolina, we were a legal
right
whiskey distillery. You know, no offense to any other county that might want to claim the name for Banner Corn Capital. Mm. No, for legal distilleries, we had over 100 legal distilleries here in Gaston County. So that's 100 that were regulated by the government. They paid their taxes. They had seals. That actually was a thing. The barrels had to be stamped with a seal.
Okay.
That was for your individual distillery. And basically overnight, when that went into effect in 1920, literally overnight, you had whole operations that you know, had employees, had, you know, massive operations in some cases. Literally overnight, you just made them illegal. So that's over 100 employers here in within the confines of one county. Take away the people that were already doing it, you know, on their own.
Right.
But all of those people, all of their employees, all of their entire livelihood overnight became illegal.
So and a lot of them had to find new, you know, lines of work.
Yeah.
And you know, go from being a very profitable business to not even be able to do it, or you're going to get arrested. And they knew, I mean, they knew how it was going to be done by the Revenue Service and, you know, because they've seen illegal distilleries being shut down. They just were no longer law-abiding citizens and they had to change their ways. Yeah. Some did, some, you know, went to other industries and some did not. They just kept on going.
We actually have a really great example of one that was able to make the switch fairly easily. The winery here in Gaston County, Baker Buffalo Creek. Mm-hmm. That land was initially, that family and their operations there on that land, they were initially a legal whiskey distillery.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, the museum did a moonshine exhibit back in 2012, and they came forward and brought, they still have their stamp.
Wow.
You know, from the 1920s. And so we actually, you know, they loaned it to us. We got to display it for the exhibit. But, yeah, they were one of the few. They had enough land. They had enough operations. They were able to convert their equipment and their processes and everything, convert their facility over to a dairy farm. And so operated as a dairy farm for a number of years. And, you know, the older family died out eventually. And the son and his wife came back. And now they are a winery. Very good winery, too.
And one of the always, you know, you heard as you read through it is these you know, even during Prohibition time period, apparently finding a drink wasn't a hard job. I mean, it was easily gathered. And you just, you know, it's kind of like, I know a guy kind of a thing.
Sure.
And you,
everybody knows a guy.
Everybody knows a guy. And that was the one thing about it that, you know, when you think about Prohibition, it just made everybody, you know, criminals. And you know, it didn't make them stop thirsty. Right. They just pushed it underground. And that was, you know, ultimately the downfall of the Prohibition was, you know, the desire to have something to drink.
Yeah.
And you do see some, you know, other leaders in their community. Some of them are very much part of the temperance movement. George Alexander Gray, the fame of Loray.
Okay.
He was, did not drink alcohol, which is very interesting because he even readily admits that his early years were wild. So there's some point in time during his religious conversion, he moved away from alcohol.
Okay.
But it's kind of an interesting, you know, that wasn't, you know, we normally think that's the norm, and it doesn't appear to be so. There was a lot of people that were, you know, going to church with George, like, I don't know, George, I'd still like to have a drink.
Right.
Yeah. And well, I mean, you know, too, it wasn't always the alcohol itself, too. A lot of times it was the money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, especially coming out of the Depression and everything, and in later years, I mean, this was an easy way to feed your family. I mean,
sure.
It was, you know, especially when jobs are going down and everything, and it's getting hard to find. People are going to drink. So
yep.
if you're producing and, you know, putting decent product out there for a decent amount of money, we had we have one lady, Patsy Skipper. She was from Bessemer City. And the Gazette did an interesting little interview with her back in the 70s. And she had been running hooch for about 40 years by this point.
Wow.
So started in the 30s during Prohibition. Her sister apparently was even more notorious Her name was Ma Henderson, and don't know her actual legal name. I'm pretty sure it wasn't Ma, but yes, she was well known for, had been arrested many, many times. You know, she always went to court. She always, yeah, everybody knows I make it and sell it. You know, so she never, you know, tried to fight or anything. She just paid her fine and went on her way. The only time she ever fought it, she said, was one time. It was, and she never did say what law enforcement agency the gentleman was, but apparently he was not a local boy.
Okay.
But he came in and he arrested her, and she said, "I'm not guilty this time." And the judge was like, "Okay."
Yeah,
you know? And she said, "No, because that man is swearing up and down that I sold him 2 pints of gin. And everyone knows I have never run anything other than beer and whiskey. I have never made gin in my life."
We have standards. We have standards, sir.
I didn't kill that man. I killed that man.
That's
exactly.
Right. You know. Let's get it right.
Right.
Exactly.
And, you know, and it's always very fascinating to me that one of the big enders of prohibition was the same thing that Leroy was fighting over, the money grabbers.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, when you're looking at it in our, you know, they're looking at it like everybody wanted a drink.
Yeah.
And there's like, you're leaving a ton of money on the table with this. It's unpopular and also it's killing us financially. And so as soon as it comes back, you immediately go into, you know, licensing and distillery and stamps and what have you to this day.
Yeah.
It's still being, you know, highly regulated. You can't, you know, you can't set up your own distillery.
Right.
And no matter how much you may think so after watching Discovery Channel, you just can't. And you know,
those
but
those guys are actually licensed.
Well, of course they are, but they're not going to share that in Discovery Channel. I mean, it's, you know, it'd be kind of silly if it's like, look at my illegal steel, you know, kind of thing. It's like, we can't.
By the way, that I have a license for.
Right, exactly. You can put it in the ground all you want, man. We know it's legal.
Right.
But, you know, it's just always really interesting to me that has always been the thing about, you know, alcohol and especially the spirit, especially corn and, you know, moonshine and whiskey is looking at it both in an area of the moralistic side of it, but also the financial investment side of it, about why you make it and what they're actually doing with it and how it's affecting our community. Because it was a loss in revenue and then it was gained again.
Yeah. And I will say for all those that are, you know, still suffering from the pandemic and looking for, you know, interesting new hobbies other than baking bread, which appears to be like the main one that has come out of pandemic, you know, please don't order still. It is still. So owning a still is not illegal. So there's three sets of laws you have to worry about.
Right.
There's federal law.
Okay.
Then separate states have different laws. Then your local municipalities have different laws.
Okay.
So federally, you can own a still for the production of distilled water or essential oils.
And it cannot be filtered through corn mash, I've already asked.
No, okay. No, that distilled water cannot go through corn mash. There is no essential oil for corn mash.
sure, it sounds pretty essential to me.
It does sound
essential.
I would agree to that.
I agree it is, but the government disagrees with me, sadly. State of North Carolina is basically the same thing. They follow the feds, so you can't do it. If you want to produce fuel, like your home brewing fuel, basically, for your car, that does require licensing. You're not required to have a license for your essential oils. If you're wanting to do corn mash essential oil locally and state-wise,
mm-hmm.
you do actually have to go and get federal licensing on top of your state licensing. And that and this is even for your own home use. This isn't for selling, you know, to your neighbor or anything like that. Especially when we were doing this exhibit, we had this so many people, you know, crop up on Facebook and what have you, and it's like, oh well, it's okay, you know, as long as you're drinking at it. No, it's not. You know, they will arrest you. They are still looking for people. This is not relegated to the 1920s and 1930s. They do still bus people quite regularly.
ATF is going to assume that you're not just brewing that for yourself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And they want their tax money.
Exactly.
I mean, do you think that that's a not necessarily a widespread thing, but like there's a number of people that do their own kind of home distilling or home brewing that don't know about this sort of stuff and just kind of do it?
I personally have a lot of friends that do homebrew, like, you know, beer and wine and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just about every single one of them have at some point mentioned or another, you know, I'd love to get a still and destroy and decide. And I'm like, oh God, no, I know you and you're going to get caught.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I don't, honestly, I couldn't even begin to guess what the statistics are of people out there that are doing it, but there are definitely people out there doing it. There's far too many websites where you can go on and buy, you know, some really, really nice copper stills. I don't think they're all making lavender oil.
No.
You know.
No.
So you can look up and find, you know, a YouTube video on how to do just about anything.
Exactly. Yes.
And what I always say is if you're looking at the YouTube video, so are the people who will be very interested in your still looking at that video too.
Exactly.
So be very mindful that you just can't do it. If you can do beer, you can do wine at certain volumes, but you cannot do, you know.
And, you know, I mean, it, on top of that, quite honestly, it's dangerous. I mean, it those things will blow up in a heartbeat. So.
Well, it's pressurized. You know, yes. It's a pressurized cooker. And you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you didn't pay attention to that part of the YouTube video, you're making a pipe bomb in your basement. And, you know, that's dangerous.
Yeah, my wife doesn't trust me to handle, like, my daughter's grilled cheese. So
right.
I really don't think that I'm going to be able to get a still.
Well, any spouse out there, if you hear your loved one say, I'm going down to the still, you got to stop. You got to put a stop to it.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
Dear, you're going to pick up a new hobby.
Right.
You know. Disc golf. Let's do that instead.
There exactly. You go. There you
get
go.
Get outside, a little bit of social distancing.
There you go.
Exactly. You know. Great. We have a number of great disc golf courses around.
Right. And it goes well with whiskey. But I'm not, that's just.
That's
incidentally, you know that was the name of our first canine here in Gaston County?
Whiskey?
Yeah. Wow. The first law enforcement dog we had here in Gaston County, his name was Whiskey. But yeah, he came up with, so we actually had a sheriff, Sheriff Waldrop, that his big thing, the thing he was elected on, was actually shutting down all the nightclubs, all the joints and Blind Tigers and speakeasies and what have you. And he started getting death threats. And
oh, wow.
not just death threats, actual assassination attempts. So somebody came and fired four rounds of a shotgun into his house one night. And then...
So a very popular man.
A very, very popular man, yes. His wife actually... So his son was actually telling us this story. But... she came in and, you know, started waking him up from school and everything. And he was like, can I sleep a few more minutes? And she was like, yeah, sure, that's fine. Went out on the front porch and then she came back into his room and started fussing at him about leaving trash all over the front porch. And he was like, I didn't leave any trash on the front porch. So go out there and, you know, his daddy walked out there with him. Just, you know, son, you left trash out on the front porch. Mm-hmm. Daddy walks out there and he goes, Mom, I get back in the house. That's a pipe bomb.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, they that being the second attempt. But it obviously didn't work. It did explode a little bit, apparently just enough to make trash on the front porch. But they did eventually arrest the gentleman that did it. A group of guys from Kings Mountain, actually, four gentlemen. But he decided, you know, we need to start, if they're bringing explosives into this mix, we need to start, you know, getting a little bit more help with it. So he went down to Camp Lejeune and got himself a dog and learned how to work with the dog and brought it back home. And the dog's name was Whiskey. And apparently Mama was not happy about the dog's name either.
I mean, I guess you could honestly say that it's the only... whiskey in the whole county that had more bite than something that's 100 proof.
I saw what you did there.
Nice one.
Very nice. Very nice. Terrible.
I'm here for all the bad jokes.
Yes, there well, you go. Okay. You just do that.
Yeah. So anything else? I know you guys have kind of a lot of stories to tell here about the Prohibition. Are there any others that we didn't get to that you want?
We could talk about Jerry Rushing, who is who they based... the Dukes of Hazzard off of.
Really? What?
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I had no idea.
Oh.
Wow, we're all going to learn something.
There you go. So, yeah, Jerry Rushing. He was actually born in Union County, but he had a lot of run-ins here in Gaston County. He ran moonshine in the late 50s, early 60s, and throughout the 60s. But he did not make the moonshine. His family did. His daddy and his uncles did. And Jerry was the driver. Okay. So Bo and Luke Duke are Jerry Rushing. They are
interesting.
They are both designed, and the car, the General Lee, was actually done after his car, which was actually named Traveler after Lee's horse.
Well, Lee's horse, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I forgot who it was that got wind of Jerry Rushing. He was notorious. I mean, he was absolutely notorious as a runner. This is the guy, whenever you hear people talk about these fantastic contraptions that they would attach to the cars and everything, the smoke screens and oil slicks.
James Bond sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Jerry Rushing did all that.
Oh, please tell me about some of this. On his car, the Traveler.
On Traveler. So he never had a smoke screen. He knew guys that had smoke screens. He would tell you how to build one and everything. There's actually diagrams out there as to how they did the smoke screens. Huh. He was actually notorious. He had an oil slick. He had a little contraption under his car. He'd press a button, fling some oil in the road behind you, and the folks who were chasing him, you know, be it the revenuers or be it the law enforcement, would go skidding down the road.
Wow.
Just dump a ton of oil out in the road. His big thing that he was known for, though, was his lights out. And his tacks. So lights out is with this little technique that he would do where he would drive. He could get law enforcement to chase him for a while. I mean, he could stay ahead. His car was modified well enough. He could stay ahead of any law enforcement car in the county. But he would do this thing where he would tap his brakes every so often, like when he was getting up to a curve or something like that. And he would be the first to tell you, he didn't need brakes to go around a curve. but he would tap them, and he'd get the other driver used to seeing his brake lights come on.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually when they would hit a spot, when he judged a spot was just right for it, he would basically hit his brakes, but he would hit a separate button, and his brake lights wouldn't come on. And so he would swerve over real quick, hit his brakes, but his brake lights didn't come on. And, of course, by this point, they were going so fast, they would go right past him.
Oh, wow.
And then he would flip the car around and go off in the other direction before they could turn around. So that was one technique that he would do. His other was he had this his rear bumper would fall off, at which already, you know, you've got a bumper coming at you, right. You know, tinging down the road. But there was a compartment on the inside that he had filled with tacks. And so as he's going down the road, all these tacks would come flooding out onto the middle of the road.
Oh, man.
And would just, you know, take out their tires.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, he did the whole, you know, moonshiner's turn and everything. Mm-hmm. Like I said, guy never needed brakes to go around a curve.
The original drifting.
The original drifting is from these guys. And he was absolutely notorious for it. But he was talking to... Someone, like I said, this guy was notorious. I mean, he was in papers. He had been arrested several times, had been shot at, you know, multiple things. I mean, he was just infamous. But someone got a hold of his story and came and interviewed him, and you know, he made some tapes and showed him some of his runs and all that kind of stuff, and they said they wanted to make a movie out of him called Moonrunner.
Okay.
And I never quite figured out whether or not they actually made the movie. But the script from that is what became Dukes of Hazzard.
Wow. That is outstanding.
But yeah.
Wow.
And he said the route he did, so he did about a 9-county route, and he said it was basically like having a milk route.
Yeah.
He said you knew which houses you were stopping at, and he said those were your clients, and you went and you just stopped at each house. And yeah, here's your delivery on the port.
And then it got dispersed from that particular home.
Yeah.
The mail comes at 2, the bootlegger comes at 4.
Right. Exactly.
Make sure you're there. Got to pick it up.
I mean, yeah, can you imagine getting that text from your wife right now and everything? Hey, babe, the moonshine. Right. The moonshine is going to be delivered at 7.
Right.
Could you make sure, you know, you've got his money?
I got a couple packages coming from Amazon. We got the bootlegger coming over at 4. They may show up at the exact same time. Just, you know.
He's got a thing. He only wants cash. And we're ordering pizza tonight. He doesn't like Venmo.
Right, exactly. PayPal's okay, though. I mean,
yeah. Doesn't take as big of a cut.
Yeah, exactly.
Money grabbers.
Money grabbers. You got to watch out for them. Dirty money grabbers.
Awesome. Well, this is great. This we'll definitely have you guys back. I know that you've got a lot of other stories to tell, and you know, not just stuff that you guys have had as exhibits at the museum, but just, you know, you guys are kind of this wealth of information for history and you know, being able to give people better insight into the past of Gaston County.
Yeah, we look forward to it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got some funny stories.
We do.
Awesome. Jason, Alex, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.